In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss philosophy, free spirits, and fish tacos in the third book of the Custard Protocol, Competence by Gail Carriger. Fish tacos.
Anybody else really fancy some fish tacos now?
Okay. Yes.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss the third installment of the Custard Protocol, Competence by Gail Carriger.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love us so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up. Hooray.
Cool. I thought you'd missed a bit, but then realized I was reading ahead.
What a dog.
I know, shocking, I know.
Do not get ahead of yourself.
Da-dum-tsh. Hello.
Oh, hello.
You've met me.
I have. Hello.
Oh, dear me.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know what's nice?
Raining for a change? We've had
a lot of
rain.
Is that a thing that's happening where you are?
Yeah, it's like not raining for the first time in like 4 days.
That is nice.
I'm still drying out from Saturday.
It's not been that rainy here.
Yeah.
From your murder mystery investigation.
I'm still drying out. There was the Cray brothers got murdered.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Infamous gangsters. We solved the crime. Ooh. Just the
so
two of
glad
us as
that
well.
You solved the crime. It's very good. It's very good. I was going to say that I'm excited that I don't know that I have really been coughing for the past few days, and I actually feel like 98% myself.
Yay!
I know. It's shocking.
Please cue the song from Beauty and the Beast that was cut. I'm human again. Do.
Yeah. Go ahead, you can just sing that for a while if you want.
I can't remember the rest of the words. It is in the Christmas special, though.
I don't know that I've ever watched the Christmas special. It's kind of funny, but Christmas specials aren't my favorite thing.
Oh,
but
I love them.
You and I are going to have our very own Christmas special, so I need to love them, apparently. I need to get on board with Christmas specials.
For at least an hour and 34 minutes, yes.
Yes, 1 hour and 34 minutes.
That's all. Unless the movie was like, I don't know, had little monsters in that were cute and fluffy and turned green and vicious.
You know...
Don't.
I don't even... That's not even for me either.
I'm just going to hang up now.
I mean, I don't... Don't slowly put your finger down in front of me.
It's better than putting the finger up.
That is true. That's going to be our new thing. We're going to slowly point our fingers down at each other when we're upset. I think that sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Are you gonna slowly point your finger down at me if I tell you that I haven't seen the live action Grinch movies?
No, that's fine, because I'm not the biggest fan of the Grinch movies.
Okay.
So, and controversially, please don't at me, Elf is okay, and only okay.
I agree with you. It's overdone, I think.
It is a very overrated movie.
Yes. Let's find something new to latch onto, I think.
Yeah. But it's not Christmas yet.
It's not Christmas yet. I was going to say the exact same thing. It's not Christmas
yet.
Ooh,
spooky psychic.
Ooh, witch!
Witch! We're still in Halloween land.
We are. Oh my gosh. Do you know what I'm looking forward to speaking of Halloween, just having an episode not be completely cursed. We've been so cursed lately, and I hope it doesn't happen this time. And I might have just cursed us just saying that.
Thanks for jinxing. It'll be a Christmas miracle. It will. That's going to be my Christmas wish.
That we finally stop being cursed.
That we finally stop being cursed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
Yeah, I don't want to be cursed. No.
It all started around Halloween as well, didn't it?
It did. I think we were actually cursed. I don't know who would have done it.
Maybe we need a sage stick and a purifying spell kind of circle thing.
Yeah, we can cast a circle.
Okay. Which element do you want?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a good question.
That could be a question for a future podcast episode.
Didn't we already do that?
Yeah, but we only talked about two. We can go for another. There's five of them to choose from. We can pick another.
No, we did. We did all four, right? And that's when we did some weird thing with all four. Liking the picture or something. We did all four.
Oh, yeah.
We did not do the fifth one, though.
No. That kind of makes ghosts.
Yeah. I think I said air so I could fly. I think that's what I said.
I think I said the same thing. I remember the Metallica quote.
Yes. And you sang the song. And then I...
It was majestic.
I added Metallica into that episode.
Yeah.
Was very good. All of that.
As it is only right and proper.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was good. You gave me three different versions.
I thought two of them didn't work.
They didn't, because we're cursed.
Yeah.
But we made it. We made it through. And several people have listened to that episode now.
Yay! Thank you.
So that's good. Hooray! Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening. You'll get another one next time. Let's get started.
Yeah.
Yeah, woo! So I read an interview with Nicholas Yanes from scifipulse.net, and it was back in June of 2018, around the same time that this book came out. Yanes said, "I first learned about you because several of my friends were raving about your audiobooks. What steps do you take to make sure your audiobooks are so engaging?" And Miss Gale says, "I was raised on audiobooks without a TV, so I think of my stories as being told around a fireplace late at night. When I'm writing a new book, I always like to do one revision where I read the whole book out loud to an empty room. I find it helps me catch errors, but also smooths the voice and cadence of my own style and use of words. For my indie projects, where I have complete control of the narrator, I'm really careful about who I pick and I hire a really fastidious producer to make certain the audio quality is really high. I'm a bit of a nerd about it, actually."
Nice.
Yes. And I had to pick that because we love audiobooks so much.
No, I think it's really appropriate. And plus it says audiobooks are carrying on the whole oral history of storytelling. Yes, so it's a very traditional way of intaking a story.
Yes. It always frustrates me when I see people debating on whether listening to an audiobook actually counts as reading a book.
Technically, it's not by the definition of the word read, but you are consuming it. You could hold a discussion about it. Or a podcast, even.
Really?
So it's amazing, that, isn't it? It's strange. But without being all like... pedantic about the use of the word read. Audiobooks are reading the book.
Yes.
It's the same as a graphic novel or comic book. It is a book. It's just a book with pictures.
Yes.
Don't be all high and mighty about it. Sorry.
No, I also am a proponent of reading graphic novels. And in the graphic novel class that I took in undergrad, the professor said that to properly read a graphic novel, you have to read it three times. One, you read the words. Two, you read the pictures. And three, you read them both together. So in the library, when any parents would come in and complain about their children reading graphic novels, I would explain that to them. Like, this is what your child is doing while they're reading this book. Whether they are or not, I mean, they are. But it takes a lot of work in your brain to read a graphic novel, and they're very worth the read.
I think it's because, I mean, if you think about it, children read and consume and learn to love books because of the pictures that are associated with the words.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're then forced out of it the older you get. The pictures get removed. Why?
Yeah, why?
Why? I love it when you get a book and, well, look at Miss Peregrine. Okay, it's not a graphic novel, but it is so artistic, the fact it's got such a cool, like, amalgamation of the written word and the picture. And it just makes a beautiful piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
So why not?
Why not? Dawn Kurtigage's books are like that, too. You know, they have their pages. The pages are interesting to look at. There's something for you to see when you're flipping through, when you're reading it. So it's not just text on a page. There's something special about it, which makes it exciting to read.
Exactly.
Oh, let's get back around to Gail Carriger. Have you read the Soulless manga?
Yeah, I've got them novel upstairs or whatever. Somewhere buried. Yes, I do own them.
I have not ever even seen one.
You have technically, if you've seen the profile picture on fictionalhangover.com.
Well,
you've seen two of them. If you look closely at the books that are piled up, there are volume 2 and volume 3. Because I can't find volume 1, it is buried somewhere in the bookcase. I'm hoping it is on the bookcase. If not, I might have to have it jaunt onto probably a used bookshop, online bookshop now.
Yeah, I haven't seen them with my hands in real life.
They are lovely.
Right, seeing them with my hands, I haven't.
They are lovely. It's confusing though, like I was confused with manga reading it the opposite way. My brother, on the other hand, he absolutely adores Japanese animation, Japanese comics, everything. He just consumes it all, and he just picks it up and he just falls into it naturally. And I'm like, oh, it's the other way.
It only takes a second to get used to, though.
Yeah. But Alexia is rather pretty in the manga.
Really?
Yeah, she's very young and very pretty. And I think Alexia is pretty, but she's pretty in her own right because it's all of the components put together plus her attitude and personality. But I find her, and this is what I like about Miss Gale's books, people aren't aesthetically unachievable. Like, Prue is described several times in Competence as having a rounded figure, or she'll fuller figure, or, you know, she embraces her curves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of like, you know, the aesthetic is talked about, but it's not a size zero glossy magazine thing. It's attainable. And I think that's probably one of the attractions to Miss Gale's books as well, especially people who like to cosplay, because then they're like, there is a certain reluctance, and I've seen them on like blog posts and articles where a lady of large proportions, such as myself, feel uncomfortable cosplaying as somebody like Wonder Woman because it's an unattainable figure. I mean, height alone, I'm 5'5". I ain't ever going to be an Amazonian. But also, I don't have the waistline of an Amazonian. And I never will have the waistline of an Amazonian. But then, you know, if you can get over that and dismiss it and just be yourself and be confident in your own skin, fabulous. Go you. Very jealous. But with Miss Gale's, you know, you could don the bustle and the corset and have it just pouring out because it's real. It's very real. Why does it always come down with bosoms?
It's all, I don't know. It's because they're there.
Not that much
all
to
the
do.
Time.
They're always in my peripheral.
Now, see, at me, I have to, like, look down and, like, into myself to see my bosom.
I can rest my head. Let's move on.
Can I just tell you, though, before we move on, if ever the day comes when we are together, you and I, in the same place, we're going to have to do some cosplaying, and I want you to be whatever character you want to be. No matter their size or shape or color or gender or whatever.
You'll not recognise me because I'm just going to walk up to you and I'll be all cosplayed up. And you'll be like, who are you? And I'm like, you don't recognise the sexy, sultry British accent? And you'd be like, no.
And then I would look down and then I would recognise your bosom. And then I'd
yes!
be like, oh, it's Claire.
Yeah!
I would recognize those bosoms anywhere. What the hell is this conversation coming to? I'm sorry. Did you have any initial thoughts of this book? Just pretend none of that happened.
What? Initial thoughts. What did I think? Yay! I'm so excited to read Competence.
Yay. This is your first time reading it, right?
It is. It is. It is. I purposely made sure I left it so it was going to be ready for the show. Because initially, I was going to listen to them, but the audiobooks weren't released in Britain yet. Mm. To which I got in touch with Miss Gale, and she's like, I'm working on it. I'm like, yay! And she did. She worked on it, so I've been able to listen to it. And I was just so excited. And I'm even more excited for Reticence. And I want to listen to it now. If we didn't have a schedule, I would be listening to it right now. Actually, I probably would have finished it.
Yeah, you probably would have. Well, if you do go, if you do get ahead, just write the summary as you go and then we'll be fine. Oh,
it'll be done by next week.
I mean, really.
I am so excited for it. This book has set me up for Percy. The whole thing feels like it's just been a complete setup for Percy, and I'm like, I'm living for it.
Yeah. I forgot that Percy had so many, like, point of view chapters and sections in this book. I had completely forgotten about it. I haven't read it since it first came out, so, I mean, that was about a year ago. And I had completely forgotten. I thought, okay, well, this book is Prim's, and the next book is Percy's, but I forgot. Yeah. And I was excited because I like Percy.
I don't think it was as much of a Prim book as I was initially expecting. I expected it to be very Prim, like in Prudence, and Prudence was dominated by Prue. I was expecting this to be very Prim centric, but it really wasn't. Probably close to half the book, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the majority of it was from her point of view and inside of her head, but there was so much else going on, and then there was also the Percy stuff too. It was, like you said, I think it was really half and half, Prim and Percy. I gotta say, I missed Rue.
Yeah.
I love Rue, and I missed her.
I love
Rue. But I don't love Prim, but I loved Rue, and I missed her.
Do you not think Rue's character actually develops a bit more when she's not necessarily in the spotlight? I think I can get a handle on, I think I understand her personality a little bit more, and exuberance when you see it through somebody else's eyes rather than her own. Mm-hmm. I think you're kind of like, yeah, this is a girl I need to be on a dirigible with and go on adventures with. And mm-hmm. I think from this book especially, you can look at Prue and you can see, yeah, this is why the Tunstall twins follow her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I think Competence, and without having yet read Reticence, I think the first two are definitely Prue, and I'm thinking Competence and Reticence are the Tunstall twins. So rather than saying this is Prim's book and this is Percy's book, it seems to be this is the Tunstall twins' books.
Yeah.
Because of the point of view. But I'll reserve that judgment until Reticence.
Oh, Reticence. I'm so excited to read it over again.
I do remember when you mentioned it on the podcast and I hadn't listened to it, and you were desperate to talk about it then, and you were like, no, Claire hasn't listened to it, so I'm not going to say anything. And I was sitting there and went, thank you. With my little earphones on. Just a lonely little social media creep at the time.
Yeah.
Aww. Should we delve into the summary?
Yes, let's do. We find our friends of the Spotted Custard in Singapore as we begin Competence. Primrose is mid-mad dash, running to catch up to the custard as it seems to be floating away without her. Or is it sinking? That can't be good. She reaches the ship a little too late and hears a squeaky Roo yell up to her that she'll have to stay in town while they fix the leak. I love when they have helium leaks and all of their voices are
it's
so high.
It's just so funny.
It's so good.
Oh, I'm kinks at that bit.
Prim can't stay in Singapore unchaperoned, though. So up jumps a lioness carrying a bag and wearing a sun hat. Everything is so hilarious.
It's the way to begin a book.
Prim and Tasharit find a hotel to stay in that allows pets, which makes Tasharit hiss, and into the room they go. Prim sneakily glances while Tasharit regains human form. She reads through her correspondence and finds that she's been dumped by her fiancé. What a shame, insert eye roll here. She also received a very oddly worded letter from Alexia. She'll have to use the isinglass cipher to understand what it actually means. Rue got one too, but Prim would never read someone else's mail. That would be inappropriate. Speaking of things Prim thinks are inappropriate, she and Tasharit must share a bed. It's not like she's never shared a bed with anyone before, but this is different somehow. Also, Tasharit is completely naked. Everyone puts her hand on Prim's hip. And Prim likes it. Not yet.
It's gonna be, though. Ooh, saucy. Sexy steampunk sexcapades.
Sexy steampunk sexcapades.
Meanwhile... Prior to this, meanwhile, on board the Custard, they are sinking rather quickly. Rue is afraid of landing in the sea because, one, can they float? And two, she can't swim. Percy manages to direct them to the beach while Spoon. Honestly, you can't get the staff these days.
Oh my God,
this is
so
why
good.
We shouldn't write the summaries on our phones.
No, we shouldn't. Any more burger up ahead or up above was. She's never shared a bed with anyone. Any more burger, but this is different. That's why.
Oh, dang it! Okay, Percy manages to direct them to the beach while Spoo fixes the leak. Way to go, Spoo! Now they just have to wait for Prim to arrive, hopefully with more helium. Rue asks Percy to go check on the prisoner. Oh yeah, do you remember that they've still got a prisoner on board? It's Rue's Italian cousin, Rodrigo, who tried to murder and or kidnap Rue at the end of Imprudence. Well, now you do. You're all caught up. Percy finds he likes talking to Rodrigo. Rather, he likes arguing with him. He's been put in charge of bringing him over to the good side of humanity by starting a book club with him.
As you do. That is exactly
come to the good
how...
side. We have custard tarts and tea. Oh, this is how you do a book. This is fun.
Yes. Prim has devised a rather sneaky plan to acquire more helium and take it to the beach where the custard is waiting. It's so smart of her to think of this. Since she is currently in the sky above where the ship is, she has found a means of transportation called a dropsy, which is full of air and helium, and when people are added, it slowly lowers to the ground. Prim earlier learned that the townsfolk are afraid of a mythical beast called a merlion, and therefore has fashioned a tail for Tasharit to wear to become this frightening creature. Prim distracts the others on the dropsy while Tasharit transforms. Prim cut the dropsy free of its tether in hopes of being able to see the custard and float directly to it. Well, that's not quite what happened, but they managed to make it anyway. She couldn't see the ship, but Tasharit could. So they were guided unnecessarily to the location of the spotted custard by fireworks.
But it was just so pretty.
It was pretty.
And it terrified the people in the dropsy. Altogether, back on board, Prim gives Rue her correspondence, and together they learn that they are to head to South America for another species of were-creature. Oh no, my little puff bonnets, for another type of vampire. One they may need to save or exterminate. Let's see how the conversation goes. They set a course for South America. Percy's excited because not many have made this trip before. Will the chart still be accurate? Before they puff up into the ether sphere for a 10-day journey, that's a long time in the ether, they have a big dinner together. This dinner does not go particularly well. Percy calls Anitra an Aravani, a word that Rodrigo used to refer to her, thinking it was something lovely, but actually it seems rather offensive. When he goes to apologise, he can't because Anitra has locked herself in her quarters. Instead, he encounters Tasharit, talking to Prim after realising she's no longer engaged. Asking if that means they could be together now, Prim says, no, it's not proper. Come on, you know you love her. Everybody does. We're totally shipping you. Percy explains that Prim is difficult. Something else that's difficult? Puffing up into ether and catching the correct current using outdated information. Percy is able to successfully do it, though. Or not without a little bit of trouble.
After the ship is untwisted and everyone is settled, that trouble, twisted up ship, Percy runs into Prim, who seems concerned about Tasherit's well-being, even though she's dead asleep. Percy yells at her about how she's been treating Tasherit and leading her on, being overly concerned about her while she's asleep and flippant about her when she's awake. Finally, I'm so glad he was yelling at her. Prim clearly knows how she's been acting, but is upset to realize that other people see it because she is a young lady of quality, or should I say, qualité. She won't admit that to anyone, though, of course, but we as the readers know that she knows what's going on. Percy is dealing with quite a few relationship issues, as after that encounter, he talks with Rue about his attempts to convert Rodrigo. To render a man's soul without religion requires logic, love, loyalty, or legal tender. So they decide that love is a viable way to convince a soulless person to, well, act like they have a soul. Percy declares loudly and in front of Anitra that he believes Rodrigo prefers the company of both men and women, which makes her smile. While they're briefly out of the ether, Prim takes dinner with Tasherit and declares to her that she intends to marry and have children. But then she bangs her head on the table after Tasherit leaves. Come on, Prim. Jeez, get over yourself.
Honestly, she's so proper.
She is. She's so prim. Prim and proper.
That's all in the name.
It's so convenient.
I know. It's almost as like it was planned.
Oh, really?
After their second, more successful puff through the ether, they arrive near Peru, where, guess what? They're shot at. But they can't tell who's doing it.
Shot.
Again. They puff back up into the ether and then down again, trying to surprise their attackers. But they are surprised instead when a small, soup ladle-looking ship appears. Tasherit had joined them. Well, Prim, really. Kisses her. Ooh. And just as Prim regains her composure, they are surrounded by the grey. Prim looks around to find Tasherit collapsed in the ether, asleep. What is going on? Percy, with a bit of help from Rodrigo, brilliantly recalled a bit of old debunked science from an Italian mathematician that talked of Caprioca ether pockets, and realised that's exactly what was happening and why the ships firing at them were so strange. You can't shoot a gun inside the ether or you'll explode. Duh. So the handle of their ladles, as it were, are where the guns are poking out of the pockets.
They decide to wait until nightfall to venture down to attempt to talk to someone in the soup ladle and hopefully not murder them, because they want formerly flute available to assist Anitra and Rodrigo with Spanish translation and Tasherit to be there as a lioness. Tasherit talks to Percy about getting permission to court Prim, and he says he thought she already was, but will give her his tasseled fez as an engagement gift if it works out.
Love that!
I know, I love it too. Prim goes to ask Anitra and Rodrigo to join them on their jaunt and discovers them slightly disheveled. There's more discussion of Anitra being Aravani, which Prim now thinks means barren. Anitra can't give Rodrigo children, but it's not because she's barren.
When night comes, they do attempt to talk to the captain of the soup ladle. Things go about as well as you think they would for the custard's crew. The discussion begins with them trying to figure out how to ask if they know anything about vampires, blood eaters, or flesh-eating old men. When they are asked about monsters, the captain said that he is from Lima and there are no Pishtacos there. So that's their word for vampire or whatever they have similar, and they prey on the mountain people of the Andes. Canel pops up at that time to get them to ask about the ether pockets, and then they start shooting again. Then Percy pops up and it gets worse. Apparently these two boys are too pale, which obviously makes them vampires or pishtacos or whatever. Tasherit gets frustrated and leaps onto the ladle to take their captain prisoner.
Primrose is so upset when Tasherit comes back. How dare she just leap over to the ladle like that? It's not like she's immortal or anything. Wait, she is. The two end up romantically entangled in the hallway and are spotted by Flute. Well, at least he won't tell anyone. Oh, and Kanel. Kanel was there too. Tasherit hisses. Again, she's hissing all the time in this book. She hisses again and goes to her room. And Prim and Kanel pretend that nothing has happened. But later on, Rue comes into Prim's room to talk. Unlike Flute, Kanel did not keep his mouth shut. Rue doesn't care, of course, but only wants to help. So she brings Prim some postcards. French postcards. With ladies doing things. Prim looks through them and, oh my, is that even possible? She is inspired, but also nervous. She doesn't know what to do with a woman. She is saddened by the idea of never having children or a family of her own. Rue assures Prim that Tasherit will definitely teach her exactly what to do with a woman, that she will always have a family on the ship, and that she's a mother to all of them all the time, and that everyone is okay with the two of them being together.
Aww.
That was such a nice little scene between them. Yeah. Rue brushing Prim's hair. So sweet.
Aww. They manage to arrive near Cusco just as they completely run out of coal and water. Percy is the only officer awake up top and has to call down to Aggie to see if there are any reserves, and of course there aren't. And of course Aggie is terrible about it, which inspires Percy to be less terrible person in the future.
Nice.
Now Percy has to figure out how to steer the ship without a propeller and find a place to moor it. He finds a cathedral that will work perfectly. He moors the ship with only a sleigh rocking that wakes literally everyone on board the ship and finds that he has drawn a crowd in the streets. It's Christmas! And everyone is celebrating the arrival of the custard as he don't get many visitors.
It's Christmas. It's Christmas.
How appropriate we're doing this in December.
I know. It's perfect. Yes.
Christmas!
Everything is Christmas! Rue, Rodrigo, and Anitra talk to a priest who believes Anitra to be a nun, what with her veils and all. And now Prim gets to dress up as a nun as well when they go out shopping. And they take Spoo, who also gets to dress up as a tiny nun, and it's hilarious.
A tiny nun.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so that's good that Prim is covering herself up because she's also too pale and they would think that she's a fish taco as well. So, but she needs to be a part of the shopping trip and her face can't be seen. So, fake nun she is. They learn the location of the fish tacos because people will tell nuns everything. Prim sees a stall with things made from alpaca, like baby booties, and uses that as an opportunity to talk to Anitra about how she feels about being barren, since now Prim is choosing to be childless in her relationship with Tasherit. Anitra explains that she can't carry children, but could have them, and it finally clicks that Anitra has dangly bits, or outward genitalia, as they are so fond of saying in this book, instead of the interior variety.
They have penis. Just say it.
She's penis. A penis. She's a penis. Anitra has a penis, everyone. They have a wonderful conversation about how the drifters just call her a woman because that's what her soul is. So that's what she is. Anitra also shares that Rodrigo has proposed and that she is so happy because he loves her for who she is all the way around. Prim suggests that, as captain of a ship, Rue can marry them and would likely be happy to do so. It seems that love and loyalty are at play in turning him. They might not need logic or legal tender after all.
They float along and find the hive of the pishtacos. Rue, Anitra, Tash and Rodrigo disembark to speak with them, while Percy and Prim are armed up top with the Deckling on the Gatling. Canel is also there, but overly worried and unarmed. Oh, Canel, why are you so worried? Rue will be perfectly fine. She's always fine. The Pishtacos are emaciated with long white hair, red eyes and long tubular-looking teeth. After some conversation, they attack Rue specifically, which is the worst thing to do because she's a metanatural. Remember, she can steal the supernatural form. They're not just were-creatures. Have you ever seen her become a vampire before? I can't recall this. I don't think so.
Her ever becoming a vampire. We know that she can.
She has. But it has always been. No, it's never actually been in the books. It's always been like when she was at Dharma's talking about stealing people's. Unless you count the original Soulless series when she's a baby and she takes Dharma's when he holds her finger one time. I don't think we can count 20 what? Years ago.
No, but if we're going to do that, then we need to talk about her being a tiny little wolf cub in a dress. Because that's one of my favorite things.
That was just so cute. So cute. Aww. That would be like some kind of like gif on Twitter, wouldn't it? Like, oh, this is going to brighten you. I'm going to put this on your feed to brighten your day.
Tiny little wolf in a dress.
Oh, dear me. Anywho, Rue becomes a Pishtaco and runs back to the custard. Anitra follows, leaving Rodrigo and Tashrit to fight. Rodrigo has excellent form and is a very skilled fighter, using his preternatural ability to take away the Pishtaco's mortality and stab them with a butter knife. That well-known implement of doom. They manage to get back on board the custard, but instead of leaving, they plan a return visit, with proper vampire etiquette this time.
Before the fighting began, they learned that this is the only group of Pishtacos left in the entire world, and Rue knows what it's like to be the only one of your kind. She also happens to know that the Pishtacos aren't blood suckers, but fat suckers, which is why, as the plumpest of the crew, they attacked her. She wants to save them by taking them out of the mountains to a new location, preferably one where round ladies might like to have some of their roundness removed. Prim wants to make contact with them as the daughter of a vampire queen and give them gifts, taking Percy along as escort. Tashrit hates this plan, but Rue is all for it. They drop the most elegant of Prim's calling cards and wait for a response.
The calling card is well received and Prim and Percy go down for a visit. The Pishtacos are impressed that the English vampires are not subject to the Inquisition and were pleased to meet so many types of people, especially an ancient one, Tashrit. Percy and Prim brought butter as a gift for the companeros, the drones as it were, and a bracelet and face cream for the queen. The Pishtacos say she will need more than that, a taste at least, in order to be seen. They would prefer not to offer that. But then the queen walks down the hall and agrees to speak to Prim. The queen does indeed not taste Prim or Percy and agrees to be rescued by the crew of the Spotted Custard. As long as the 7 Pishtacos stay together, they can be moved safely. So Rue charters a train to take them from South America to Los Angeles, California. The queen promises to write to Prim once they are set up in their new home.
It's a perfect place for them to live.
Oh, it's almost like the new, this place that likes theatricals.
Yes. So perfect.
Yeah.
Back on board the Custard, Rue marries Rodrigo and Anitra in a ceremony arranged by Prim. Prim and Tashrit decide that they can't really be married, but they belong to each other. Percy wonders where they'll be off to next because he'll have to start working on the charts and planning a course. Rue informs them that they'll have to go back home to London for another wedding. Hers. She and Canel are pregnant. That's why Canel was so worried earlier. Prim begins to cry, and everyone thinks she's sad because she had just come to accept that she and Tashrit would never have children of their own. Tash even going so far as to say that she would find a kid for them. She would steal one. Prim is not sad, though. She's very, very happy because remember, she will always have a family on the ship. And let's face it, Rue definitely can't do this without her.
They definitely have a codependent relationship.
Yes, they do.
Imagine somebody handing Percy a baby as well. He's like, what is this thing? And just starts studying it.
Flips it upside down and pulls his glasses down on his nose.
Oh, yes. And he'll like study the like pooping habits of the lesser spotted metanatural child. What does this cry mean?
Let me judge by the pitch and the loudness.
To be fair, you are told to monitor the first poops for the colour and everything to make sure that it is passing. So, you know, he's got the right of it.
That's fantastic. Wasn't that a good ending, though?
It really was. And it's like it could have actually ended the series at that point quite nicely.
Yeah.
But I'm so like glad that they're not.
I know. I feel like I read that Miss Gale didn't know if her other two books were going to be picked up, so the first two can stand alone.
Very much so.
Yeah. So then there's this one, and then the next one.
Yeah. I love a series of books. I really, really do. But then there's a lot to be said for something that's standalone. And even if it is a book in the middle of a series with this one, you could just pick it up without having read Prudence or Imprudence. Mm-hmm. So I do like a standalone now and again. You know, you just want to read something that's got, I'll give you all the positive feels.
Yeah. And all of these books are definitely full of positivity. I love Miss Gale's books.
There's always a saying that just makes you smile, and then there's another one, and then another one, and then another one, and you just think about it, and you go, yes, I forgot about that happening. And I do like these books. All the positive feels.
So many. So many of them. Do you know what's one of my favorite parts? And it's because it was so funny to me, and I don't know if it was meant to be taken as such a funny part, but I thought it was hilarious. When Tashrit mentions liking to play with Anitra's tassels. But then she's like, I mean, I prefer my genitals on the inside. And Percy like completely misses it. It's so great. So great. Because I mean, Anitra does wear tassels in her hair. But it's just so funny because she's like, but oh my god, I prefer my genitals on the inside.
Just like, to clarify, you need to know that. That's not the tassel I like.
That's not the tassel that I prefer to play with. But and Percy doesn't understand any of it.
Yeah, but he turns around. Percy turns around to Prim and tells her to wear a beaded tassely dress for Tashrit. It's like, you're getting your sister to wear sexy outfits for her girlfriend.
Oh, Percy. That's a little weird.
It is a little weird. Do you know what? I actually thought Percy is weird. I thought Percy could have been gay or bisexual. I wasn't too sure. Throughout the first two books. And I kind of appreciate the exposition of him going, well, I did experiment at Eton as one does. And I definitely prefer my genitals on the inside. And I'm like, oh. Because the blur for reticence mentions a doctor, just to jump ahead, but doesn't say a name or anything like that. So it could have gone either way. I didn't know. I was completely in the dark. So it was like, all right, okay, you like girls. I get that. That's fine. Moving on. Oh, I love that scene with the Turkish fez, though, when you talk about tassels. And oh, that was just hilarious.
It's very good.
I will give you my Turkish fez as an engagement present. Thanks!
Yeah, he's like, I hate this hat. Surely it wouldn't be bad if I gave it away, right? I can't get in trouble if I give this hat away.
I love the fear that gentlemen have for their valets. You can't mess with a valet. You can't mess with a very good valet. Poor Virgil.
No, you gotta keep Virgil around.
Does Virgil know that Spoo's a girl yet?
I don't think so. Maybe with her being dressed as
a girl,
a nun, I don't know.
What's a little nun called?
I love that they have that. Like, are they little nuns? What are they called? What's a child nun?
Oh, that was so funny.
Everything about this book is fantastic.
Yeah. I like the way that Nietzsche being trans is addressed, and it's done in a very smart way, and the explanation that it's not the physical, it's a soul.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that.
Yeah.
And you could see why that would make Prim actually go, hang on, just because I've got lady parts doesn't define who I should love or want to be with. It's my soul that defines who I love and who I want to be with. And I really like that.
I'm glad that the soul plays such an important part in all of these books, but especially this one. It just made everything make so much more sense. And not that there's anything wrong with any of it, but I think it made the characters feel comfortable being themselves because there is mention of a soul.
Yeah, I think even if you consider Alexia, though being soulless, in the original series, in her series, yes, she falls in love with Lord McCon, but there's always that possibility that she was going to, you know, because that relationship just went one point, that, you know, she would have possibly got together with Canal's mum. With Genevieve, and that was always a possibility, and that was obviously she was pushing for it, and it never came to fruition. But because she was soulless, it's kind of like the dangly bits or the internal bits didn't play any kind of part with it, and that's why Miss Gale's so good at queer fiction, because she's very clever with the way she words it and very sensitive to it.
Mm-hmm.
She puts it into context, I think, that anybody can understand and hopefully accept.
It doesn't feel like she's doing it to make a point like some authors do. It fits into her world and it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that it's not a thing.
Yeah, it's not representation for the sake of throwing it in there and not actually being representative. It's a token gesture. It's there because it's essential, and it's also, it's just who they are.
Right, right.
Which is lovely. I loved how accepting Percy was of it as well.
Oh my gosh, I know.
How bloody enlightened is that man? He's fabulous, I love him.
Yeah, I like Percy too. I really like that discussion that Prim and Anitra had in the marketplace where it finally clicks for Prim. I thought that was really well done too.
That was excellent. At that point, were you screaming, she's trans, come on.
Yes. Like, come on.
I had absolutely no indication in any of the books previous to this that Anitra was anything other than a woman, which she is. She is a woman.
Right. I remember, though, when I read it the first time, it had been a while since I had read the first and second one. And I feel like at that time, I thought, this is coming out of nowhere. Why did we decide to make Anitra Erevani? And then this time, as I was going back through and, you know, I knew it was going to happen. I knew that this was going to come out in this book. I noticed a couple of like very small details in the first two that made me think, oh, yep. Okay. Mm. There it is. There. I see it coming this time.
Yeah, she's a very smart writer.
Yes, she is. So clever.
Yeah. It was a massive surprise for me. It came out of left field. But does Percy know? Because I know he calls her Erevani and it gets her very upset. And then everybody else seems like, I say everybody, Prim knows. Rodrigo obviously knows and Fluke knows. But does Canal and Prue... Uh-huh. And Percy, I mean, it's not important because, you know, Anitra is a woman. They don't need to know anything other than that because that's who she is. But do they understand what Erevani means after the conversation in the stateroom? It's not really covered.
I don't think so. But probably it's not covered because, like you said, like it doesn't matter.
No.
It does matter, but it doesn't matter at the same time because Anitra is a woman.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, I guess that's probably all that they're even, like, they're not even concerned with it.
No. Okay.
Yeah, but no, I don't think that they know. I really don't. I mean, it just hasn't been said.
Yeah, as a reader, we don't know that they know or not, don't know. But then it's neither what we didn't know about Anitra in books one and book two, but we do in book three. Is it important? Is it not important? You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, is she a good person? And does she love Rodrigo? Yes.
Yes.
So sweet. Bet it was a kick-ass wedding.
It was. You know, I think Anitra is my favorite character in this one.
Really?
I think so. I like Anitra. I like the way Maura Quirk does her voice. I like the way it sounds. It's pleasing to my ears.
It is. It's very melodic. Is that soft?
Yeah, it is. I also like Rodrigo, too. His little cousin.
Oh, he's so awfully Italian.
I know. It's so great.
Yes, I do like Rodrigo. I think he's amazing. I thought you would have said Tasharit, actually.
I do, but I think I've already said that she's my favorite, so I felt like I needed to give another character. Because I do love Tasharit so much. I think she's probably my favorite character overall. I don't know, though, because I also like Rue, but then Rue's time has passed.
Yeah. She's going to be a pain in the ass pregnant, isn't she? I still am devoted to Percy. Probably even more so after this. Mm-hmm. He's such a clever, enlightened, sensitive person.
Yes.
He doesn't put up with the rubbish and the bullshit.
No.
And he is what he
is. I love that about him. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's so accepting of everybody and anybody, and you know, he wants the best for his sister. And when he says to Prim, I'll stand up with you against mother, and she's like, oh.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
That was a good scene between the two of them for sure.
I honestly don't know how much Prim knows her brother, especially after reading this book. I don't think Prim gives Percy enough credit. And actually, when he's like, yes, I want to be published, I want to be known, I want my name to be recognised for these scientific discoveries and insights and, you know, all this stuff. And she finds it quite shallow and hollow. And it's like, well, at the moment, all you want to be is the wife to somebody you don't love and have children in a loveless marriage. And I thought, you need to look in a mirror. Dare I say, I don't know how much I liked Prim in this book necessarily. I mean, I liked her as a character, but I think I found that she was a bit more shallow. She wasn't it might just be my bias towards Percy, but, you know, she was rotten to him at points. And yes, you do have that sibling rottenness, you know, hello, I have a brother. But, you know, I'll defend him as well as tell him he's been silly.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Prim did that for Percy. I'm just thinking out loud about it. I don't know if you picked up on that. Like, she doesn't know her brother at all.
No, it really seems like she doesn't. She's really, as much as she takes care of everyone, I feel like she's kind of self-centered. She cares a lot about her appearance and how people see her and how she should be prim and proper in everything that she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she focuses a lot on that.
Yeah.
So I think she's really focused on herself quite a bit of the time.
And what she does know about people is quite surface details. Like when she's shopping, she goes, oh, I'll get the pineapples for this sweetness because I know somebody likes this. I'll get the avocados for somebody because I know I like that. I'll get these because I know Cook will be able to make whatever he can out of his creation. It's very surface details. It's not like she actually intimately knows these people. And some, like, characters like Anitra and Rodrigo, you know, and even Tasha, they're very relatively new to the crew. You know, Rue, Prim and Percy have grown up together. Cannell's known them all the lives as well.
Yeah.
But I don't honestly know how much Prim knows and respects these people for who they are. And that's an intense flaw of hers. But again, I've said this before, it's one of the reasons why I like Miss Gale's books, because her characters are imperfect. And that makes them highly relatable. So yeah, I think Prim's treatment, actually, of a brother is possibly my least favourite aspect of the book. I want to shake her and go, get to know your brother. You find out that he'll stand with you when you go home and introduce your girlfriend to your mother, who will go ape. You know, he's not just accepting, he's like enthused over it. And he learns from people, like talking to Aggie, he's like, I did not like the way she talked to me. Do I talk to people like that? I think I talk to people like that. I'm going to change. Or when he mans the ship overnight because he's the best person for the job, yes. Mm-hmm. But then it gives everybody a chance to have their rest that they need. And it's little, he wears the fez, not for him, but for Virgil.
Right.
And it's these little things that's like, you don't know your brother. This is what his thoughts are. This is what his action. This is what his actions are. It's not as if it's all in his head. You know, the fez is very blatantly there. And it's kind of like, yes, he craves the gratitude, but that's because he's probably, I mean, Rue is essentially his second sister.
Right.
And, you know, they have acted and still act as sisters rather than as people towards him.
Mm-hmm. It's like they can't get past that annoying brother side to see every other thing about him. They're like, oh, he's my annoying brother, or almost brother, and he's just so smart and he just talks all the time and I'm so irritated by him talking all the time. And that's it. That's all they see.
They hear the Latin and that's it. And he does it purposefully because he knows it annoys them, which is a very brotherly thing to do, and I absolutely adore that. I'm hoping in reticence, whoever the protagonist is shouts at them and go, do you not realise this is the person? This is the wonderful person he is. You don't know the man. And I'm dying for that. And I'm not going to look at your face because your face will give away what's going to happen. So I'm going to look off at my new shelves and go, ooh, look, I love my new shelves. Right, I'm back.
Yes, look at your shelves. Don't look at me. Okay, very good. So you said that's your least favourite thing.
Possibly. I mean, as an aspect, if we're talking scenes, the ladle thing went on a bit long for me.
It did, but they have to be attacked at least once or twice.
To be fair,
you had to have the ladle pirates.
I'm surprised.
They have to be attacked.
Well, exactly, but I'm surprised when you got attacked like twice.
Yeah.
And even then, one of the attacks was like, because of Rue's well-rounded figure. I like the fact they thought of when they got the cathedral, they were under attack and they weren't everywhere celebrating them. It's like, yay, it's Christmas. Yay, the Inquisition's come.
Yay! Oh.
What about you? Is anything that, like...
Well, okay.
What was good? Give me the good and the bad.
I just feel like I should stick to either reading or listening, because I went back and forth with this one a couple of times. Like, there were a couple of places where I was out in public waiting and I didn't have headphones. Like, it wasn't appropriate for me to put headphones in. So I was reading along and I didn't realize that a lot of the things that Prim said are her thoughts and she wasn't saying them out loud.
Oh.
I didn't realize that. I thought that everything she was saying, you know, that sounded like it was out loud, was actually out loud. And no, she's not. She's barely saying anything out loud at all. And I didn't realize that.
I did not either. Thank you for the information. Oh.
You're welcome. A lot of her speech is in italics. Therefore, it is inside of her head.
How do you do italics in a voice? You can't really, can you?
It's a gentle shift. Mm-hmm. You can do it. I could teach you. I learned that in my voice acting classes that I took. I learned a lot of things in those classes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just a gentle shift. And then after I realized that that was happening, when I read the italics, I went back like, okay, yes, now I can tell when she's talking in her head. Like, I paid more attention to it.
Yeah. The monologue did seem more internal. But it does make me wonder what I've picked up and what I haven't. I think it's probably based on other people's reactions.
Yeah. Oh, can I tell you something else?
Yeah.
I irrationally hated pud.
Pud.
The Christmas pud. I don't know. I hate it.
The word pud or the actual item?
The word.
Pud.
I don't know. I don't know why. It irked me.
Irked a wonderful word.
It is.
Pud. I have no objections to the word pud. But maybe it's a Britishism.
Yeah, I guess so. But they were talking about Cook being so proud that his Christmas pudding was going down and it was making a difference. And then they shortened it and then they called it a pud. And I was like, ugh.
You see, you're not saying it right. There's something about the way you're saying it just doesn't feel right. It's definitely a Britishism. I hate Christmas pudding. Ugh. Yuck. But I don't hate the word pud.
Pud. How do I say it?
Pudding. Pud.
Pudding.
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 Yeah.
But then how do you say the shortened version of it?
Pud.
Pud.
Pud. P.
Pud.
Hard p. Pud. Like spud. Say spud.
Spud.
Change the autumn over you.
Spud.
No, change it to pud.
Pud.
There you go. A spud is a potato, by the way, just in case you're wondering.
A spud is a potato. I know that. I was just laughing about how much of this I'm going to leave in. It's just me going, pud, 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 pud. is it time?
It's time. It has to be time.
It has to be time. Okay. Time, woo! Okay.
It's time, it's time, it's time. Pew, 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 pew. It's time.
So, the question that we ask to you guys on social media is shortened in our summary because we had to use generic terms for you, but we know these types of vampires. But we asked about vampire types. Would you rather be a carrion-eating vampire or a fat-sucking vampire? But in the world of Gale Carriger, these are Rakshasa or Pish Tacos. So which would you rather be, a Rakshasa or a Pish Taco? On Facebook, 34% of you would be Rakshasa. You would eat the carrion. And 64% would suck fat. You would be a Pish Taco. On Instagram, it was 66% Rakshasa, carrion eating, and 34% fat sucking, Pish Tacos.
And on Twitter, It was 75% carrion eating, on 25% fat sucking, Pish Tacos.
Oh.
We only had 4 votes this week. I'm very sad.
We did not have a lot of votes on Instagram either.
No, please feel free to go to Instagram, Fictional Hangover, or Twitter, at Fictional Hangover, no ER. Please.
Yes. Interact with us on social media because we will interact with you back.
And our Twitter. Podcast will. Yeah, I was going to say our sentient Twitter handle will probably interact with you.
Yes.
Yeah. I keep expecting it to knock at my front door and be like, Claire, what are you playing at? I'm sorry.
What are you doing? You need to stop.
One day it will hold an intervention. It'll have a little letter. This is how you've harmed me. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We have to be kind to our podcast.
It's cute. It's sweet. It's lovely.
It is. So, LaToya on Facebook said, a fat-sucking vampire would be so helpful around the holidays when it seems the pounds keep piling on around midsection and thighs. Yes, it's very good if you knew one. Are you going to suck your own fat?
Can you suck your own fat? That seems like an insult that we need to use in the future. Go and suck your own fat.
Go suck your own fat. Yep, I agree. the downward pointing finger and suck your own fat. Yep. There it is. Does that need to go on a shirt?
Maybe. It really does. Madeline on Facebook says, I'd set up a weight loss day spa a la the Supernatural episode. Everyone's happy!
Oh, that was such a good episode of Supernatural. With fish tacos. They called them that. And they were, and Dean was like, fish tacos? Like, yep. I'm glad they had the same experience that I did, because I thought that they were saying fish tacos. Nope. Fish tacos. Very good. Colin on Facebook said, so here's the thing. The idea of eating fat makes me feel physically sick, so it's probably going to have to be carrion for me. But then there's the bad breath issue. Eating dead stuff is going to make your breath smell like, well, dead things. So can I be a carrion-eating dental hygienist just to try and balance things out? After all, you can't be a sexy vampire if your breath smells. It goes right back to the day spa. It all makes perfect sense.
I love this. I love these responses.
Me too.
We do have one on Instagram. Miss Richards Reads 89 says, carrion eating, because I just envision this huge slab of fat and I just can't. I mean, all of these are very reasoned arguments. I love it. Yes. I love it.
Yes, they are. There were a lot more comments on Facebook that are just like, I can't imagine just eating fat. Like, I don't even like to eat fat when I'm eating meat. So, no. Me neither. I can't.
There were some on the Parasol Protectorate Squee group that were just like, nope, neither. And it's like, you can die.
Guys.
Come on. You can die if you don't eat your fat or you don't eat your carrion. What are you going to do? You're a vampire.
Yeah.
You can't have the blood.
The blood. You can't. You cannot drink the blood.
Just have to drink brown pop. Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
Yes. Thank you. I will have that. So which one are you? Are you a rakshasa or are you a fish taco?
Probably a fish taco. Fish taco. Fish taco.
Yeah.
I don't really like the whole idea of the bad breath thing, and technically as a meat eater it is a dead thing I'm eating, but I'm not gonna sear it and smother it in garlic butter.
Right.
I would miss that on a steak.
I'm probably
gonna go, because then I've just got this image, like, as I was thinking about it, of having delicious shortbread. And shortbread's just so buttery and sugary and delicious. And that's kind of the image that I got of a pish taco, that when they're devouring their fat juice drinks or whatever. What's the Slurpees? Is it when they're devouring their fat Slurpees?
Yeah, ew. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was kind of like buttery shortbread. That's what came to mind. So
yeah, you didn't think of like chewing a big gristly hunk of meat?
No. Tripe. You could get tripe in this country years ago. And as disgusting as it is to see, thankfully, they don't really do it anymore. Which is odd because I can't stand, you know, when you get pork belly at a restaurant and it has that big rim of fat, I cut all of that off. I'm really particular about meat. I can't eat fat at all. Like, I have to cut the, like,
no.
Even with bacon and things, no, it's gone. It's gone. But given the option between a shaka or a pish taco, I would go pish taco. At least then you feel like you're performing some sort of, like, service to people. I could start charging, like, to eat.
Yeah.
You know, you give me the money and I get a grub. That feels like a good deal.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. What about you?
I think that I would probably be a fish taco as well. But then I was thinking more the different types of vampires in this world, not necessarily just based on what they eat, but also their appearance and how people see them. The Rakshasa are the tax collectors, and nobody likes the Rakshasa. And I feel like people will like the fish tacos once they finally realize, you know, who they are and what they are. I think that people will like the fish tacos better. But also I think about how kind of creepy they look with their long silvery hair and their red eyes and their silver fingernails and their spidery movements. And I think, like, do I want to look like that? Or do I want to look like a Nosferatu sort of creepy tax collector guy? But still, I think I'm going to go Pish Taco.
Yeah, I kind of got the image. I don't know about you, but you know the Keanu Reeves, Gary Oldman, Dracula movie?
Yes.
So you know when you first meet Gary Oldman, he's got the silvery hair cone things and the red eyes, and it's a little bit Emperor Palpatine at the same time.
Yes.
That's kind of the image that I got for it.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, oh, dramatic. And also, you're not a tax collector. You raise an excellent point with that. You're not a tax collector. Bum deal.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question as an aside? Have you ever watched Dracula Dead and Loving It?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Do you know me?
I know. I knew that you would have, but I just, when you talked about Gary Oldman's hair cones, I just imagined Leslie Nielsen taking off his hair hat and hanging it on the wall.
I actually saw Dracula Dead and Loving It before I saw the Bram Stoker Dracula movie.
Me too. What's our next would you rather question?
Would you rather wear the Turkish fez? The Turkish fez. Or an ivy tunstall hat.
I want to wear an ivy tunstall hat.
What would it look like?
I don't know, but it would be big and it would be ridiculous and it would probably have some sort of creature on top, maybe like a bird or something, or like a squirrel. I don't know, but it would have some sort of creature on top with lots of bits and bobs hanging off of it.
You want full taxidermy?
Very big. Yes. Yes, I do. I think it would be great. It would be very big and very fantastic and would not make any sense at all. And would probably be too heavy to comfortably wear. But I want to wear a big, ridiculous hat.
Would you have it as a Biffy creation, or would you have it as original Parasol Protectorate pre-Queen Ivy? So would you have an Ivy Tunstall, or would you have a Queen Ivy hat?
That is a difficult question. I think I'd have to go with an original. I'm going to go with an original.
Because my thought is, if it's an original Ivy Tunstall rather than a Queen Ivy, it would be even more ridiculous, and like the colours would be all wrong, and like the squirrel would be like smoking a cigarillo, with a top hat, whereas Biffy would do it in a bit more of a graceful manner. It would be more coordinated and be structurally sound.
No, I want to go full ridiculous. And I'm glad that you also imagined the squirrel wearing clothes, because I did, without even, like, even thinking about it. The squirrel is also wearing a ridiculous outfit with possibly a ridiculous hat. So I'm glad that you did that too.
Yeah, you could even have, like, a squirrel, like, bride and groom for to a wedding if you... Yeah, you can...
Yes.
You can taxidermy those animals for an appropriate event.
Yes. Yes, and I definitely would. Okay, what about you?
I have to agree. As much as I love Percy's fez, Tasha it can keep it. I want an ivy hat. I want full on ridiculous. I want some kind of massive amount of architectural infrastructure that goes on. You know, like if you took it all away, you'd be like, that is the eighth wonder of the world right there. But I don't know if I'd go taxidermy. If I went down the taxidermied animal route, which I'm happy to do so. Sorry, creatures. Mm-hmm. I can't be a bird. I can't stand birds. Unless the bird's a penguin. I like penguins and eagles and stuff, but I'm wild, you know, in their natural habitat. I couldn't have, like, a peacock on my head. That would make me vomit. But, yeah, I could go for squirrel or, like, a little mouse family.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have, like, something cascading. I want a full-on fairy tale theme.
Yes.
You could have like a three blind mice thing going on.
Okay.
So, I'm with you. Just full on.
Yes. All right. Good. I'm glad. One of these days, whenever we get together in real life, we're going to have to make ivy tunstall hats.
So, we have a massive list. We're going to cosplay for a day.
Yes. Watching ridiculous movies.
Uh-huh. Eating crumpets.
Eating crumpets. Forcing you to drink brown soda.
But no, stop it. I'm bringing my own tea bags. Fishing, that was on the list.
Fishing is on the list. Yes.
My pilgrimage to Pike
Your
Place.
Your pilgrimage, yes.
All of these are Seattle-based.
They are all Seattle-based, so clearly you have to come and visit me first.
Hmm.
Oh, and we also have to eat crumpets at that place that I saw downtown across the street from the strip club.
Can we go to the strip club afterwards?
Yes, we can.
In full cosplay.
Nudes.
Can we go in full cosplay?
Wearing Ivy Tunstall hats.
Yes. We'll have a crafting day, make our Ivy Tunstall hats, and we'll go for crumpets and then to the strip joint.
Yes. Okay. So our cosplay that we're doing could just be something in the Parasolverse.
You could do Rue. I mean, you've got the darker complexion than what I'm a blonde. I'm not dark. I'm pale.
Yeah. My skin is pale, but my hair is dark. So yeah, okay. That's it. So how long are you going to be here? Like 3 months?
It's looking that way.
It's going to have to be. Otherwise, we're not sleeping. And it's just everything is crammed full of activities.
Well, that's the norm for me, so whatever.
That's true, so it'll be fine. It's fine.
Oh, dear me.
Okay.
What's the next one? Yeah.
Would you rather fight hand-to-hand combat?
Oh.
Fisticuffs. With Rodrigo or Tasheret? Tasheret is human form. Rodrigo does not have a butter knife.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes.
Okay, second clarification. Okay. Are they wearing clothes?
Yes.
Okay, that's less sexy.
Yeah, they are wearing clothes. I'm sorry to take that away from you, but yes, they are wearing clothes. Tasheret can be wearing her, you know, like barely a scarf, sexy robe. But Rodrigo is wearing a proper gentleman's outfit.
Okay. I'm not going to win either way, so that's fine. However, no. I'm going to say Rodrigo purely on the basis of it, hopefully. I realise you're saying it's fisticuffs, there's no weaponry involved. I kind of wish there was, because I want to basically reenact the scene from The Princess Bride with Inigo Montoya and the Dread Pirate Roberts on the cliff top. So if I can do that with Rodrigo, that.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I like that. I like that little cousin.
You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Prepare to die.
Oh.
Little cousin. I think that I am going to fight Tasheret because she's not a lion. And while she is very skilled, she is an ancient one. I feel like her fighting would be based on her teeth and her claws, which she doesn't have as a human. So I'm going to fight her. Also, just to watch her swirl around in all her sashes and things would also be fantastic.
Yeah, grab her by the hair and just like leer into her, because she's got long, lovely hair.
She does have long, luxurious hair.
Mm.
Yep.
I can imagine it being a bit more of a sexy fight with Tasheret.
Yeah, it probably would. Probably would be.
That's why you kind of need to clarify the clothing situation. Possibly even, you know, the chocolate pudding situation.
Yes, chocolate pudding or like a feather pillow.
All you'd need is a tassel. Just go in there with a tassel. It's not weaponry. And just jingle it about or some catnip. You've won. Oh, you've got the easy fight.
Yeah. Take her some kippers and some cream.
Just bribe your way into the fight. Okay, so I'm going to be on the cliff tops reenacting one of the greatest sword fights in the history of cinema, and you're going to be dueling a were-lion.
Playing with a cat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Playing with a cat in human form.
Yes.
This is where fan fiction is made of.
Yes, it is. There will be no sexy steampunk sexcapades. though, in our fights. No.
No, you can leave that even for Prim.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking, though, when you asked if they were clothed, I immediately thought of Kanell and his leather apron.
Get your mind out of the gutter, woman.
Can't. Can't.
Have you gone to the happy place?
I have. But then the leather apron makes me think of Naughty John, and then I get scared again. So, I don't know.
It's like you can see the cosplay with the leather apron, and it's like, smiling, yay, Kanell. Angry face, oh, Naughty John.
Oh, Naughty John.
It's like two sides of the same coin. Ish. I will put in there, just while we're talking about Kanell, I missed his French accent in this one. He just wasn't in it enough for me.
No, he only pops his head up to get shot at.
He's stuck in the boiler room with Aggie. Oh, it's just not good times. And there also wasn't enough spoo when I'm going on to the not enough things. Okay.
No, there was definitely not enough spoo either, except for it as a tiny man.
Eating insects and rats on sticks.
Yes. Oh, eating her rat on a stick. But she also did patch the balloon. So she is a hero.
Spoo with helium voice is hilarious.
It is.
It's one of the greatest things ever.
It is. I love Spoon.
You haven't done your Spoon voice this episode yet.
That's right, I haven't. I'm sorry. Sorry, Lady Captain.
Yay!
I've done my Spoon voice. Oh, Spoon. Lady Captain. But then how do you get it up higher than that? It's ridiculous.
That's your homework.
Spoon on helium is my homework. Okay, yeah. I'll do it. I'll report back. Next episode, don't let me forget. Spoo on helium.
I'm going to write it in the show notes.
Yes, take a note. Put it in the notes. Okay, so you have stolen a mode of transportation. Do you steal the soup ladle or the porcini?
I do like mushrooms. I love mushrooms. Mm-hmm. However, the porcini in this instance is not edible. And no, I don't think it's entirely not. Practical.
No.
Not as a getaway vessel. So I'm going to steal the soup ladle. And I'm going to rename it broth.
Yes. I like it. That's a good name. It's a good name for a soup ladle.
Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah. I like the idea of the porcini. If I have Prim's little pocket puffer that she has to steer it, that she had at the beginning. Pocket puffer porcini. That's what I'm going to do.
For all your travel needs. You can see the
old-fashioned,
like, 1920s travel poster, can't you? The dirigible in the air. And
Yep.
Mint.
Yep, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, what's our next question? How long is this episode?
I'm so confused. Would you rather... Oh, would you rather... Stop it, you're making me cough. Would you rather be a merlion with a fish head or a fish tail?
Question is terrible. Okay, so if I have a fish head, how much of my body is lion? Like, do I have four paws and a tail and a fish head? Or is it like I have two back paws and the front half of me is a fish? How does this work?
Well, it's not real. So anywhere you want it, really. In my head, I kind of see that, you know, it's kind of the waist is the cut-off area.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I have fins in the front from my front hands. That's right, my front hands, because that's a thing, my front hands, as opposed to my back hands.
Yeah.
So, I've got fins and a fish head and lion legs
and
a lion tail.
Yeah. Or you have a lion head, lion front paws, and then a fish tail instead of back paws and aligns to.
I mean, I feel like just for ease of getting around, I would have to have a fish tail, because something about, like, I just feel like if the top half of me was a fish, I would just fall over, and then my lion legs would be kicking around not knowing what to do, and I would just be like pushing my head against the ground, and I don't think that would work. So I'm gonna have a fish tail. Just based. This is so bad. I'm gonna have a fish tail.
It's broke me.
I'm crying. Okay, well, excuse me. I need to take a note real quick to draw that for a t-shirt. So I gotta add it to our drive.
Save the were-lions.
Save the were-lions, and it's just scooting ahead of me.
I love the practicality of the fish tail. Fish head. And it will be a catfish head as well.
Oh, good, with whiskers?
Yeah.
But no, because it's pushed into the ground.
But the little tentacle-y thing, like...
Oh my gosh, I did not expect the question to end up that way.
It's a dumb question, though.
Oh, it was good, though. I really enjoyed it. Okay, very good. Final thoughts.
Having a fish head or a fish tail is just ridiculous. Seriously, final thought.
Final thoughts.
Okay. Do not give untapped wealth and social influence to a woman whose greatest love in life is increasingly outrageous hats.
That's a good final thought. It's a good life lesson to live by.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yourself?
I chose a bit of a quote. Percy says, "I need to be where other people are not for a while." And I like that. I like that Percy takes time to be by himself. And I will say that it's okay to need time by yourself for a while. And you can spend that time thinking about if you will have a fish head or a fish tail. Ponder that in your own private library. How will a merlion with a fish head and fins get around? That's what I would do if I'm by myself. That's what I'm going to think about. And also practice my spoo on helium voice. Yep.
Oh, this has been delightful.
Has been very good. I love our Gail Carriger episodes. They're always so much fun.
They really are.
They really are. Do you have any recommendations?
Oh.
Do we need your fanfare?
Boop, boop, boop. And Spoo's helium voice, please.
And Spoo's helium.
Perfect. Love it. Keep it up. No, forever. That's how I want you to speak. Forever. Okay.
Only like this forever. Okay. I'll try.
Lady Captain.
For the rest of the episode. I've got to get higher. Oh, there it goes. It's getting up there.
Oh, do that forever, please. It was beautiful.
I can't. I can't do it forever.
Okay, so this week I have gone down the LGBTQ steampunk recommendation route, since Miss Gale is a huge advocate and this book is massively representative. So I thought it'd be interesting to go down that route. So the recommendations are actually taken from lgbtqreads.com in an article by Dahlia Adler from 2017. And I'll pop a link in the comments so people can check it out. So the first one is Karen Memory by an author called Elizabeth Baer. So, synopsis is, set in the late 19th century when the city we now call Seattle, underground, was the whole town and still on the surface, when airships piled the trade routes, would-be gold miners were heading to the gold fields of Alaska, and steam-powered mechanicals stalked the waterfront. Karen is a young woman on her own, is making the best of her orphan state by working in Madden Damable's high-quality bordello. Through Karen's eyes, we get to know the other girls in the house, a resourceful group, and the poor and the powerful of the town. Trouble erupts one night when a badly injured girl arrives at their door, begging sanctuary, followed by the man who holds her indenture, and who has a machine that can take over anyone's mind and control their actions. And as if that wasn't bad enough, the next night brings a body dumped in their rubbish heap and a streetwalker who was brutally murdered.
Ooh.
So it is steampunky.
Like a fun read.
Yeah, it is a steampunky... Yes.
Sexual steampunk.
Yeah.
Streetwalkers.
I just love the fact that it had like a bordello in it. So yes. It makes it feel like very Western style as well.
Yeah.
And the second one is A Matter of Disagreement by E.E. Ottman. So a noted scholar of ancient literature and spellcraft, Lord Ashcroft or Andre de Bourbon, finds his world shaken when the new science of mechanical animation becomes the talk of high society. In response, Andre takes to the presses, gaining notoriety for his scathing critiques of mechanical animation and its founder, the Marquis de la Marche. One night, when André comes face to face with the Marquis de la Marche and discovers he is nothing like André expected, Leon Gregory de la Marche, Marquis de la Marche, is handsome, brilliant, and charming. While their clashes on paper have become legendary in person, they are even more explosive as passions rise. André knows there's no backing down. Sexy steampunk sexcapades.
Sexual steampunk sexcapades.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Very good. So that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda. So that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss the next three books of the House of Night series, Untamed, Hunted and Tempted by PC Cast and Kristen Cast. Send us an email at fictionalhangover@gmail.com if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book!
It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. Also, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.